Oh, you are just so down.
Not even a
bring
sad clown.
Me down, kid.
A happy clown. I
a happy, joyful clown. You could bring him down.
On ESPN New Hampshire.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome into another edition of New York Case in Mind. I'm Rick. Saturday afternoon, coming to you live from Brooklyn today. Not technically New York, but close enough nonetheless. It is New York, but not New York City this time. But little technicalities here and there. As you may have guessed, no Colin Henderson today. Just me for the bulk of the show, but a big show nonetheless. Going to have a couple guests on at 2:20. Going to be joined by MSG's Stan Fischler, so that'll be the theme of the day. Stan, a big-time hockey historian and expert. The joke about Stan is that Stan has forgotten more about hockey than most of us will ever know. So he'll be on at 2:20, talk a little trade deadline, talk a little hockey locals. We'll get some Rangers, Devils, Islanders, and Bruins in there as well. Try to get some overall deadline winners and losers out of him as well. So that'll be at 2:20. So as you may have guessed, it'll be a hockey heavy show. Start with the little Rangers first. The Rangers played last night. They took down the Caps, playing their second game in as many days. They kind of held on down the stretch without Henrik Lundqvist and came out with a big 3-2 win over the league leading Washington Capitals. At 2:40, we'll keep going with some NHL, probably get my reactions to the Stan Fischler's thoughts at 2:20. And get into some Islanders, some Devils, and some Bruins as well at 2:40 and at 3 o'clock. The Islanders still holding in third place in the Metropolitan Division right now. They're 5 points back of the Rangers right now. And they're a team, you know, even though you look at the record, it's been pretty good this year, 35-20 and 7 overtime losses as well. They just seems like they've never really found their footing, you know, maybe just a little bit listless this year, not quite the same energy, a lot of underachieving players on that team this year, starting at the top with John Tavares, who was not having a very, very strong season. Just seems like, I don't know, something's wrong in Brooklyn now. I was going to say trouble in paradise, not exactly. Something wrong with the mix in Brooklyn right now, but still should easily make the playoffs, should the Islanders. The Devils last night, they lose to Dallas 3-2, tried to come from behind, ended up losing 3-1, and the big news there is that Corey Schneider goes down with a somewhat ugly-looking injury, crashed his leg, his skate, into the post last night, left the game, didn't really put a lot of weight on it. They don't want to speculate, but they were saying maybe hamstring. Looking at it, I thought it was a knee. That was my immediate guess. I thought it was a knee injury, the way he reacted, the way he stayed down immediately. A little bit reminiscent of when Mike Richter got hurt all those years back when his skate clashed into the post and he ended up blowing out his knee. Hopefully it's not that, as the Devils, their playoff hopes are fading as is. 5 points back of Pittsburgh, and if Schneider goes down, then that's pretty much all she wrote at that point. Corey Schneider has been outstanding this year, a Vezina contender. He won't win it, but it'll probably be top three, certainly top five in voting, and you just don't want to see a guy like that go down. If it is a knee injury, it could also potentially cost him the World Cup, as the rosters were just announced for that earlier this week. The World Cup of Hockey going on, it'll be, I think it's September. It's before training camp next year, before the next NHL season. It could cost him that as well if it is a knee injury, so hopefully Schneider is okay, but he is out for the time being. Jan Denis called up on an emergency basis. And we'll also talk a little bit Bruins. The Bruins, kind of one of the surprises, if you will, of this season so far. 78 points, they're third in the Atlantic Division. 2 points back of Florida and Tampa, who are tied for first right now. And Bruins are one of those teams that I don't think anybody really knew what to expect this year out of them. A lot of changes in the offseason. They keep Claude Julien, but they fire Peter Chiarelli, their GM for so long, who brought a cup back to Boston. They trade Dougie Hamilton, make a whole bunch of moves. Milan Lucic is gone now as well. Those were two of the younger guys who were thought to be sort of the faces of the franchise, or the emerging faces of the franchise, a bit younger than Bergeron and Krejci, and obviously Chara, who is kind of long in the tooth. So a team in transition, but looks like they will make the playoffs as well this year, made a couple moves at the deadline. Well, of course, ask Stan about that as they add Lee Stepniak and John Michael Lyles, two kind of smaller moves there, but we'll see if it helps the Bruins, who have actually struggled defensively this year, but have one of the better special teams in the league. Kind of a stark contrast. In the years past, they've been the big bad Bruins. They kind of pound you. Goes back to the days of yore where they were so tough with Terry O'Reilly. Mike Milbury was on those teams, all those other guys. A little bit different this year. Not quite as good defensively. Tuukka Rask having to work a bit, but still very much in playoff contention. After 320, or at 320, we'll actually get into a little UFC talk. Conor McGregor, who's becoming one of the big stars in all sports right now. I mean, even if you don't know fighting, even if you don't know, well, I was going to say boxing. This isn't boxing. This is UFC. Even if you don't know UFC, and I certainly don't, you know Conor McGregor is a big name at this point. He has a fight tonight against Nate Diaz in UFC 196, and we will have a guest on from that. Will from HBTSports.com. That's the website, kind of a joint production that Colin Henderson and I and many other talented writers have started up. Again, that's HBTSports.com. We'll have a guest on from that site to talk a little fighting, talk a little MMA, and Conor McGregor, his fight tonight against Nate Diaz. So that's kind of a departure from the norm to have on a little UFC talk. I think it's the first time that we've spoken about UFC on this show. So at 3:20, we will get into that, and then we will close with some NBA at 3:40. Talk a little Knicks, and the Knicks as dysfunctional as ever, I suppose. You add Phil Jackson to the mix, and you hope that maybe this time around, you know, at least they'll be a class organization, you know, bring some credibility. Well, not the case, because now we have scandals yet again. Carmelo having to apologize for insulting a fan, apparently, and you have the horny Kurt Rambis online favoriting porn tweets, because why is he even on Twitter to begin with? So stupid with the Knicks, and obviously they have no chance to make the playoffs this year and just seem to be a rudderless franchise yet again. But what else is new? That's been the case for the better part of the last decade and a half with the New York Knickerbockers. So to start, talk a little Rangers. The Rangers, again, winning last night. They take down the league-leading Washington Capitals 3-2 in a game that was very reminiscent, really, of last year's playoff series when the Rangers met up with the Caps in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. And Rangers, for most of that series, I mean, they were outplayed. There wasn't really much doubt about it, but they came back. They were down 3-1 in that series, came back, came from behind, and ended up winning in Game 7, and that's really what the game looked like last night. The Rangers had the lead for most of the game. They were up 2-0 at the end of one. It was 2-2 at the end of two as Washington came back. They had a somewhat contested goal that got them back into it. Jay Beagle, there was a long review, about a 5-6 minute review, where it never really looked like the puck crossed the line. Logically, the puck probably went in, but you couldn't really see from at least the camera angles that we saw. But up in Toronto, the league offices, you know, they have camera views that apparently we don't, that apparently the telecasts don't, and they saw it somehow. The puck went in, apparently. Okay, sure, whatever. Didn't come back to haunt the Rangers, ultimately. So no harm, no foul. That got Washington back into it. And then the Rangers score early in the third. Derek Stepan on a shot that hit off of Brooks Orpik, caromed into the net. And then at that point, they just basically held Hunt for dear life. End up getting outshot 11-4 in the third period. It seemed very much just a matter of time before Washington would get one. But the Rangers able to hold on, and Antti Raanta having back-to-back now very, very strong games. As Antti Raanta, his last start was against Columbus on Monday the 29th on the leap day. Played well, won that one as well. So good news there that Antti Raanta, there were talks that Rangers were losing faith in him, that Alain Vigneault was losing faith in him, and Rangers were going to be shopping for a new backup goalie at the trade deadline. It did not end up happening, and Raanta hadn't really played much. I've liked what I've seen out of him. When he has played, he had some confidence issues at points this year. There was a loss a couple of weeks back. I'm trying to find the exact game it was that he ended up losing. I think he gave up 4 goals. Should be able to find it right here. Let's see. It was the, okay, here it was. It was the Friday game, February 12th, the 5-4 loss in overtime. Okay, here was the game. 5-4 loss to L.A. in overtime. They gave up 5 goals on 34 shots, and the talk was after the game that Antti Raanta looked about as devastated as any player has ever after a regular season loss. Again, regular season losses, there's 82 regular season games. Even for a backup goalie, you lose a game, it's not the end of the world. You will get another shot at some point. And they were saying Antti Raanta was, he was practically on suicide watch after that game. I'm exaggerating, of course, for sure, but he was down and gloomy after that game. Like, he had just lost Game 7 of a playoff series because he had struggled a bit. He hadn't gotten a lot of reps this year. He probably sensed that the coaching staff was losing faith in him. And you know what? You have to like that a guy takes it that hard. Antti Raanta, who he's been a backup all of his career now, 26 years old, has to figure that if he ever is going to get a shot as a number one in this league, much like Cam Talbot ultimately did. Cam Talbot played so well as a backup, and he earned himself now a chance to start in Edmonton because of how well he played last season in relief of an injured Henrik Lundqvist. Antti Raanta has to figure, if he is going to stay in this league, if he is ever going to get a chance to produce as a number one goalie, he has to play well right here, right now, with the Rangers. So that's why he took it so hard. As a competitor, I have to give him a lot of credit for that. Certainly like that he took it as hard as he did. So he's a guy that you root for, really, because of that. You can see he gives a crap, basically. And you can see after last night, pumping his fist, jumping up and down, the guy was really, really excited after a big win last night. And he played well, absolutely played well, did an excellent job in that game, really kept the Rangers in it for stretches of it, where, again, in the third period, the Rangers just did not have the puck very much at all. It was typically Washington cycling down low on the Rangers, and you read a little bit into that, yeah, maybe a little bit. Washington, a very tough team to stifle, to hold off. And, again, a little bit reminiscent, again, of last year's playoff series, where the Rangers, for large, large portions of it, were back on their heels and oftentimes desperately trying to protect a lead. Same thing happened last night, but you give the Rangers a bit of a pass as well, because it was the second game of a back-to-back. They had a tough one the night before in a loss, so perhaps the legs not quite there, and pretty obvious in the third period that the game plan was to try to sit back and protect that lead and protect Raanta. And Raanta, of course, did play very well with the absence of Henrik Lundqvist, who went down the night before. That was in that kind of odd scenario where said he had a stinger with his neck, and he throws that little tantrum where he shoves the net off its moorings, off its pegs, and ends up taking a delay game penalty because of that, because he was hurt trying to get the ref's attention. The ref ignored him, apparently, or at least didn't listen to his cries, and that enraged the King a little bit, and he ends up taking that delay game penalty, and it was one of the most steamed I've ever seen Lundqvist. And Lundqvist is a guy who's generally very, very cerebral, very, very thoughtful back there. So it was very odd to see him get that angry. And he did stay in the game, so you don't figure the injury is that serious, or at least you hope it isn't. They said it was just a stinger. They did call up Magnus Hellberg in an emergency situation to back up Raanta last night. But it is important now to get Raanta going and to get Raanta playing well. Because whether Lundqvist is hurt or not, and he is, but it's probably not anything serious, he's day-to-day is the official term, Henrik Lundqvist at this point, and this is what people tend to forget, he's 34 years old. He's played 53 games already this year. You don't want him playing 65 games. I mean, the Rangers right now, they've played, let's do the math quick, they've played 65 games. So they have 17 left. You don't want Lundqvist playing 12 of those 17 and getting to 65 games. You don't want that at this point. You really don't. He's 34 years old. You want to try to save him for the playoffs as much as humanly possible. So if Lundqvist is hurt right now, he has a bit of a stinger in the neck, doesn't seem like it's anything serious, let him take his sweet time getting back. There's no reason to rush him. Raanta right now is playing far and away his best hockey of the season. Rangers play the Islanders at the Garden That's tomorrow at 5 o'clock. If he's not ready, let Ronta play. If there's any question, let Ronta play. Tuesday, certainly against Buffalo. Buffalo, obviously, not a very good team at all. Not a good offensive team. They have Jack Eichel. That's about it right now. Let Ronta play that one, too. Certainly, even if Lundqvist is healthy at that point, let Ronta play that one. Give him a break. You'll need to do it at some point because, as is usually the story with this Rangers team, and Lundqvist has been a little bit up and down this year of late. He's been very, very hot. That's why he's been playing a lot. Started to play perhaps his best hockey of the season. But as is usually the case, the Rangers will only go as far in the playoffs as Lundqvist will take them. That's been the case in the Lundqvist era, if you want to call it that, the post-first lockout era. Rangers will only go as far as Lundqvist will take them because a team like Washington is better than they are. They are. They're a stronger team. They have more depth up front, a lot more scoring options. Obviously, with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and Backstrom and Oshie, all this firepower, Rangers can't compete with that. You look at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh playing excellent hockey all of a sudden under Mike Sullivan. Who would have guessed ex-Rangers assistant is actually getting production on the power play in Pittsburgh, getting offensive production out of the two top guys, Crosby and Malkin. And Kessel, too, has played a little bit better up in Pittsburgh. Never would have guessed it because, again, this is a Tortorella disciple. But it seems like he's adjusting well and he's getting a lot of production out of those guys. Pittsburgh. Rangers can't match that top-end talent. Same thing if they end up seeing a Tampa. The Rangers can't match that top-end talent. So ultimately, we'll come down to, as is usually the case, Henrik Lundqvist in the playoffs, can he outplay that other goalie? That's what it will come down to. So what you can't have is a 34-year-old goalie who's tired entering the playoffs. I don't want to see Lundqvist playing 65 games this year. It can't happen. He needs to sit a bit down the stretch. You don't want him to get rusty, obviously. And it's kind of that juxtaposition. When he's playing well, you want him to keep going because he feels good. You want that momentum to keep going. But Vigneault has to use his brain a bit. He has to show some gumption and say, Hank, you got to sit. Plain and simple, you're not a kid anymore. We need you for the playoffs. This is a team that's gearing up for perhaps their last big run together with this core group before there will be mass changes in the offseason. And there will be, because of the salary cap, there will be mass changes to this Rangers team in the offseason. There is no doubt about that. Whether they win a cup or not, there will be mass changes in the offseason. This team will not look the same come October next year. So they're gearing up for their final run, and they need Lundqvist to lead the way there. So we will take a break. And out of the break, we will have on MSG's Stan Fischer. We'll continue on talking hockey. You're listening to New York Peace of Mind here on ESPN New Hampshire.
1250 ESPN New Hampshire, celebrating 10 years as Manchester's sports station. Here's what you missed on Arcan and Shepard, weekdays from 3 to 6 on 1250 ESPN New Hampshire.
I read a couple of tweets today saying that there was never a conversation between the Celtics and the Cavaliers for Kevin Love, and that it was never even really honestly talked about or even brought up. A lot of times, folks, Twitter can just take you and what's the old quote? A lie can make it around the world before the truth puts its boots on. That's no more true than right now here with the NBA trade deadline.
Arcan and Shepard, weekdays from 3 to 6 on 1250 ESPN New Hampshire.
There's only three more chances to play in the 2016 Labatt Blue Manchester Monarchs ESPN New Hampshire Bubble Hockey Tournament. Be there Thursday night at 7 at Billy's Sports Bar in Manchester next to Elliott Hospital. This is ESPN New Hampshire's Pete Shepard. If you haven't played yet, what are you waiting for? Join me, the Labatt Girls, and Max from the Monarchs for some bubble hockey fun at Billy's Thursday night. The winner at Billy's moves on to the finals at the April 8th Monarchs game at Verizon Wireless Arena. For more info and a complete bubble hockey schedule, visit ESPNNewHampshire.com.
Captain Eric Lawrence was training Afghan soldiers when his truck was hit by an IED.
I was on the way from Kandahar to Kalat, hit an IED that just took the truck and threw it up in the air and slammed it on the ground. I knew at first that I got hurt pretty bad because I couldn't move my legs. I sat home alone for months. I didn't want that anymore. I wanted to go back to work. I was hesitant at first, you know, because I didn't work for a good year. I want to be a productive person. I want to be a drain on society. I want to be a positive thing in society. PVA helped me write my resume, got me a job interview. I got the job.
Helping veterans like Eric is what we've done for over 65 years. Paralyzed Veterans of America, paving access for veterans' employment through Operation PAVE. For more information, visit pva.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erksentada, and I will never forget meeting Alyssa, who suffered from hyperacusis. Alyssa virtually lived in her dark bedroom, and when I spoke with her, I had to do so in a gentle whisper. What is hyperacusis? Well, imagine being at a movie where the soundtrack is turned way, way up. After 5 minutes, you just have to leave holding your ears. Things like turning newspaper pages, running water, your child placing dishes on the table, all are intolerable to someone like Alyssa. Hyperacusis is a strange condition, but even people who suffer from serious migraines experience it. Now, you may not know someone like Alyssa, but her story underscores that all of us are being constantly bombarded with noise. So, friend, take the earplugs out and turn down the volume. And when you have a chance, visit disabilitycampaign.org to learn more about hyperacusis and other disabilities.
Ricky Sobrano back here on New York Peace of Mind on ESPN New Hampshire, beaming out through the Merchants Auto Studio in New Hampshire on this Saturday afternoon. So moving on, and we're now joined by MSG's Stan Fischler, a hockey aficionado of the highest order. Stan, how's it going today?
Very exciting. A lot of very interesting homestretch hockey is being played now, and of course it's... As the days or nights go by, it becomes even more exciting.
Yeah, down the stretch we go. Really, the last quarter of the season now, under 20 games to go for basically everyone in the NHL now. But before we get to the stretch one, want to touch on the trade deadline, of course, first. The trade deadline about a week ago in the NHL. Start with the Rangers. They get perhaps the biggest name on the market, if you will, in Eric Staal. Give up 2 second-round picks and a prospect, Alexi Sorella. Yay or nay on Eric Staal, Stan? Did he like the move?
I was very enthused about it because Staal's name had been bruited about for months in terms of him becoming a free agent. And what made it so attractive to me from a Ranger viewpoint was that eventually he'll be complimented by Rick Nash, who certainly should be back in time for the playoffs, if not sooner. So you really have two big guys there. And apart from the fact that Staal is a proven winner and was captain, there's leadership qualities coming there, and he also plays a very tough game. In fact, you may remember that he once flattened his brother Mark pretty hard.
That's right.
When the Hurricanes played the Rangers. So that's a plus. There's no question about that. I've said this many times over the last month, month and a half, 2 months to Ranger fans. Will get discouraged over a loss. I've always said that wait until the trade deadline and then see what the lineup looks like. Well, assuming Henrik Lundqvist is not going to be out long, you're solid in goal, you're solid in defense, and you're solid up front. And they've got a nice mix. Nothing proves their ability to take any team, the fact that they come off a loss in Pittsburgh, which was kind of fluky in some ways because of what happened with Lundqvist. And they go in and play the next night in Washington against what arguably is the best team in the league, although I question that. And they win. So this is quite a hockey club they have here.
Yeah, the Rangers will be a tough out in the playoffs, certainly. And what Eric Staal does provide, and it's something that we haven't seen the Rangers have in a while, is a big, sturdy center. And it's been a long, long time since the Rangers have had a guy like that in the middle. But the odd thing has been so far, he's sort of played third-line-ish minutes for the Blue Shirts to this point. Where do you think he ultimately fits in this lineup, which is, of course, not a finished product because Rick Nash is still on the shelf?
Well, in the, you know, in the best case scenario with everybody healthy, if it it would depend, in my mind, it would depend on what Nash likes best. In another case like that, you have Steve Stamkos in Tampa Bay, and there's always been this question, is he better on the wing or better at center? He likes to play center more than wing, but that doesn't mean the coach will oblige him. Alain Vigneault, a little bit different than John Cooper down in Tampa Bay, and I think that Vigneault will adopt, in this case, to his player rather than the player adopting to the coach. But one thing is certain, this is a major plus. It's, you know, we didn't know, as we never know, really, how some of these big names are going to play out. And there are big names that never played out. I know for a fact that they're very disappointed in Vancouver because they had two guys who they felt they could get something in return for, Dan Hamhos, the defenseman, and Rabada. And they're stuck with these guys. And when you think about it, the Rangers really didn't disturb the lineup. That's, to me, a key. There was all this talk that Kreider would have to go if they were going to get a big name, and they retained Kreider. And that I've said all along, and I wrote this, that don't lose Kreider. This kid's going to just develop. He may be slower than some hope, but he will be really good.
So now to go cross town for a second, or cross a bridge, cross a tunnel, depending on how you look at it. Look at the Islanders, who were very, very quiet at the deadline, really only made one minor move in acquiring Shane Prince, who is a young kid who's thoroughly unproven at the NHL level thus far. You know, I've looked at the Islanders this year, and I just feel like they've needed a spark. Are you surprised that they were not more active in acquiring a defenseman, some sort of spark somewhere in that lineup at the deadline?
Well, I wasn't surprised for this reason, and that is the most likely or the most talked about player that would go would be Hamonic, because at the beginning of the season or early in the season, it was leaked out. And I wonder who leaked it. I wouldn't be surprised if it was an agent, but that's not the issue. And Hamonic has been arguably their best defenseman all season. So the fact that they did not trade him was a major plus, a big plus. On top of that, they have some excellent prospects in the American Hockey League, and they just brought up Pulak, the defenseman, and he's fit into the team. So if you have a club that's relatively well balanced right down to the fourth line, which often is the best line they have, and you have a pretty solid defense, and you're they've managed to alternate their goalies with a reasonable amount of success. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're not buried down, you know, they're not down struggling down at the bottom of the wild card batch with Philadelphia and some of those other clubs. You know, had the Rangers lost last night, the Isles would have been in position on Sunday to really move up to them.
Yeah, just
and
3 points
back.
Games,
they do have games in hand. So my answer to your question is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Ricky Sobrano talking to Stan Fischler of MSG. So you look at the Islanders and you basically said, okay, you like the fact that they stood packed and Kyle Okposo, a pending free agent, they held on to him as well. So just holding on to their players made it the right move. But what has been the case at sort of the top of the lineup, John Tavares, guys like that, Ryan Strome, a lot of guys who haven't quite lived up to expectations this year with the Islanders, particularly offensively. Is there anything that you see on the ice that has caused that?
Well, it's the same situation that I described with some of the Rangers, particularly Kreider, and that is that you don't snap your finger and all of a sudden these guys fit in. You know, there are not too many Connor McDavids around. Hmm. And for one reason or another, it takes a little time for them to mature or to be taught how to mature. They've got some kids, or you mentioned one, Stroman, who really have the talent, but it hasn't gelled yet. I can tell you many stories about teams that went into the beginning of April with the very dubious. The classic, of course, was 66-67 when in the home stretch, the Toronto Maple Leafs lost 10 games in a row. Think about that. 10 games in a row. They lost, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other things I could tell you about that team, including the fact that the coach, Punch Imlach, wound up in the hospital with nervous exhaustion and so on and so forth. And guess what? Despite the 10 games they lost in a row, they won the cup. So what matters now is from here to the finish line, part one, and then part two, assuming Rangers make the playoffs, Islanders make the playoffs, it's what happens after that. And guys, we've seen over and over again, guys who are lesser lights suddenly find themselves and terrific, and some of the stars don't. So right now, I would say all that matters with the Islanders is A, making the playoffs and finishing as high as possible.
Stan, did we lose you there? Yep, think we lost Stan for a second. Might have lost connection there for a second, but Stan finishing up on the Islanders, I think what he was getting at basically was, yeah, they haven't played maybe entirely up to form, and yeah, we did lose Stan. We'll try to get him back and get him back on the air, or maybe even for the next segment as we're starting to run up across the break right now. But I think what he was getting at there was the Islanders, talent-wise, are right there really with anybody this year, and for the relative struggles that they have had, they're still seventh in the league at 2.8 goals per game. So yeah, John Tavares right now, he's well under a point per game. He's 50 points in 59 games, which would be one of his lowest outputs in quite a while. Looking at his numbers right now, he 86 points last year. He 66 points in 59 games the year before that, just about a point per game really every year since 2011-2012. So this year, he obviously has some work to do to get back to that. So it's been a bit of a struggle for the Islanders this year. Only 23 goals for Tavares as well, but they will be a dangerous out in the playoffs because of the top-end talent that they do have, and it's just about catching fire at the right time. So I think what we're going to do here is, since we're coming up against the break, we'll break a little bit early, and then we'll get Stan back for a couple minutes at the top of the next segment. So at about 2:40, maybe a little bit before that, we'll get Stan back on. Faulty phone connection there. That's why we lost him for a second. So we'll get him back, finish up on some hockey, and then move on with the show until the 3 o'clock hard break. We'll keep Stan until about then. Finish up on the Islanders, and then we'll move on with the Devils and the rest of the NHL with Stan after this. But also, you look at the Islanders, and the goaltending has been pretty solid this year with Thomas Greiss, he's played so well that he's almost caused a minor goaltending controversy of sorts. Greiss and Halak. Greiss has actually outplayed Halak, played just 6 less games, but a .930 save percentage, which is obviously phenomenal. Yaro Halak, .919, which is not that bad either. You expect, ultimately, that it will be Halak down the stretch of the season, or certainly in the playoffs, who gets the bulk of the reps. Halak a little bit more proven, obviously, as a starter in the playoffs. He memorably engineered that big upset of Montreal over Washington back in, I think, 2009 or 2000. I think it was 2010, actually. 2010-2011 season, when Washington was still at the height of their high-flying powers. Halak really stood on his head. So you expect he'll get the call, the nod, in the playoffs when the Islanders do get there, and it looks like they will. But Greiss, that's formed a formidable tandem this year, to say the least. And the Islanders defensively, when you look at Hamonic, Letty, and Boychuk, that's a pretty formidable triumvirate at the top. Three guys who were really solid both ends of the ice. Boychuk has chipped in offensively much more than I think any of us ever would have figured since coming over from Boston. Letty, a guy who can move the puck and play both ends of the ice. Hamonic, same thing, a little bit more of a stay-at-home guy. A little bit weak after those top three. That's where I was looking at that. I thought if there was an area they needed to add a little bit of depth, it would be on defense, much more so than offense. Marek Jadwiczki, a bit long in the tooth, still a good puck mover, still a good power play guy. Thomas Hickey, not crazy about him defensively. Same with Calvin DeHaan. They did call up, as Stan mentioned, Ryan Pulock in three games, no points so far, but he's a rookie. Is he really going to help you defensively at this point? He's a guy no more for his offense. Really, really big slap shot. I mean, elite top-end shot. But is he really going to solidify that back end? It's a lot to ask for from a rookie. So I would have liked to see them add another just solid stay-at-home, steady type of defenseman. Like, even the Capitals went out, they got a guy in Mike Weber, who I thought would have been a nice fit in the Islanders for just a third-round pick. So it's not like it was a king's ransom they have to surrender for the guy. I thought even that would have been just a solid move to solidify that back end. The Islanders, their defensemen, they move the puck, but they're a little bit redundant. When we talk about the Rangers being a bit redundant defensively with a lot of stay-at-home guys, the Islanders, they have a lot of slick puck-moving guys, not a lot of brawn, if you will, on that back end. So they maybe could have solidified that just a bit more. But again, only time will tell, and it looks like the Islanders will make the playoffs. So we will take a break, and out of the break, we'll have Stan back on, so we'll finish up with him. So we'll continue on with hockey. You're listening to New York Peace of Mind here on ESPN New Hampshire.
1250 ESPN New Hampshire, Manchester's local ESPN.
Hi, this is Pat Weinreich, general manager for The Joint. You know, the chiropractic place. With no appointments necessary, no insurance, night and weekend hours, we are making quality alternative health care convenient and affordable. And we're coming soon in March. We will be located at 219 Daniel Webster Highway in Nashua, New Hampshire. Stay tuned and please visit our website at www.thejoint.com.
Outdoor Almanac. Brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
When many people think of wildlife in New Hampshire, most don't get past deer, bear, moose, turkey, coyote, fox, and fisher. Oh yeah, maybe a skunk. But on the 25th anniversary of the Non-Game and Endangered Wildlife Program, they probably should. There are so many other critters that are residents of the state that are part of the outdoor landscape that we see and often take for granted. They deserve another look. As John Cantor, coordinator of Fish and Game's Non-Game and Endangered Wildlife Program, said so eloquently, quote, "When nature is thrown off course, we have a responsibility to help it get back on track. Knowing how much the people of New Hampshire care about their wildlife and wild places, I can't help but think that the future looks bright," unquote. We should all hope that John's optimism will be realized, because history is full of examples of, after years of turning a blind eye to wildlife issues, when it was too late, societies would say, oops, that's not a word we need to use.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests. Outdoor Almanac, brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
With firearm season here, it's time to address a couple of misconceptions. First is that if you make it back after a day in the woods of hunting, consider yourself lucky. Truth is, national surveys show more people are injured playing tennis, golf, and bowling than injured while hunting. As a matter of fact, New Hampshire has an enviable record. The second misconception is that during deer season, it's not safe to walk down the road or in the woods behind your house. Not true. Sportsmen and women know what their targets are and what's behind them before they ever raise their firearm or draw the bow. A little common sense from non-hunters will allow them to enjoy the outdoors this time of year, like the hunters do. Just don't wear clothing which is colored brown or white. Wear an article of hunter orange and walk and talk like you ordinarily would. And there's no reason why hunters and non-hunters alike can't share the woods.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests.
Physical fitness and physical activity is a family affair. Exercise is a family, and enjoy the many indoor and outdoor venues New Hampshire has to offer you. whether it's skating, skiing, the gym, or a good hike. A family that stays fit together, experiences a healthy lifestyle together. This message is brought to you by NAFRD, New Hampshire Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. Committed professionals working for you and a healthier New Hampshire.
Ricky Sobrano back here on New York Peace of Mind on ESPN New Hampshire and the TuneIn app. So now we are going to be rejoined by MSG Stan Fischler. Had a little bit of some phone problems in there, but now we have Stan back on. Thank you, Stan.
I want you to know I was neither flying the coop nor ducking your question.
I'm sure after all these years, if you needed to duck a question, you could come up with a much more creative way than that, right?
Right.
So I'll move on. We didn't touch on the Devils yet, so I want to get to them quickly. The Devils, they end up being sellers at the deadline. They get rid of Lee Stepniak, pretty good return for him, a second and a fourth. They get rid of the namesake of the Rangers, Stephane Matteau, his son, Stephane Matteau, a first-round bust to this point. And they get rid of Eric Jelena as well, a young defenseman who's just sort of fallen out of favor on a pretty deep Devils blue line. So did you agree with the Devils being sellers at the deadline?
Well, I would have disagreed a week before when they were still really in the hunt. And I believe that General Manager Ray Shiro was in the same thinking. And then they had two games in the weekday that week, which to me was the litmus test. They lost them both. They were winnable games. Team did not. The team seemed to have run out of gas. And I put that to several of the players afterwards. They did not say they agreed, but that's what I saw. So this was a realistic move. Let's face it. When the season began, nobody thought the Devils would be up at the 500 mark, or let alone above it, which they still are. So this has been a miraculous season for them. You take the fact that they lost their best scorer, Mike Camilleri, who really went out at the worst possible time, and he hasn't come back yet. So that was a torpedo right amidships for them. So when you consider that, it's understandable that they traded Stepniak. And in fact, the guys that also went, Jelena, who wasn't really playing much, and for good reason, and Matteau, same thing. They, neither of them lived up to the expectations. Plus, very important, they weren't part of the Ray Shiro regime. These were guys from the Lamoriello era, and they didn't have it. That's the best way to put it. Good for them if they do well elsewhere. I think the Devils did very well getting stuff in return. Much better.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and especially for Stepniak to turn him into a second and a fourth round pick, a guy that this time last year the Rangers essentially dumped for a bag of pucks. That's a pretty nice return for a guy in Stepniak. So move on. Take a look at the Boston Bruins now. I want to touch on them briefly, too. Boston Bruins, they were involved in one of those trades with the Devils in getting Lee Stepniak, who was a solid player, no doubt about that. Second and a fourth, perhaps a bit hefty for him. They get John Michael Lyles as well, who almost forget that he's still playing, but he is solid puck mover. And they end up keeping Louis Erickson. A lot was talked about him potentially moving at the deadline. He did not. They'll take a run at re-signing him in the offseason. Boston, perhaps in the last calendar year, no team has had more changeover than the Boston Bruins. They looks like they'll certainly make the playoffs this year. Did they do enough, or should they have actually sold off Louis Erickson?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have gotten rid of Erickson any more than we were talking about players on the Islanders. The Bruins want to make the playoffs. The Devils surprised the other day they win a game in overtime that everybody thought they'd lose, and they're maintaining that even though they don't have Stepniak, that they want to make it, and they're playing hard. And so who might they catch? They're not going to catch Pittsburgh, but the Bruins are the one team that might implode. So the Bruins want to make the playoffs, and they've got an excellent coach, always like Julian when he was in New Jersey also. But the problem really, to me, is defense. That's the Achilles heel. My buddy Zdeno Chara has never been the same since he came back from that injury. He slowed down, and I'm not overly impressed with the rest of their back line. But the fact is, they built a cushion, and there's nothing more favorable to a team like Boston that's not as formidable as Washington than to have a cushion at this time. To me, it's going to be how they do in the next four or five games. If they do a tailspin, who knows? Got to remember, strange things have happened. Look what happened last year with Ottawa and Minnesota in the home stretch. They turned it around. They stopped losing, and they won and they made it.
Yeah, there's always that one unexpected team in there, it seems, that makes a late run. And Boston, it seems like as much as anything, they just sort of rewarded their players for playing as well as they have. And nothing major, but they solidified the front end a bit for the Bruins this year. So overall, let's take a look now, take a step back. I know you mentioned Vancouver earlier as a team that really didn't do that much, that was expected to be very active at the deadline. Let's try to get some winners and losers at the deadline in your mind?
Well, nobody wins two cups in a row anymore, but Chicago has fortified itself with some wonderful moves. I mean, you look at getting Ladd from Winnipeg. That's a terrific asset, and the lesser players that they got are really solid role players, really like Dale Weiss among them. The interesting thing to me is that you look at a club like Anaheim, which was hopeless in the first few months of the season. Everybody was wondering when Bruce Boudreau would get fired, and smartly the GM Bob Murray did not fire him. And they've forgotten how to lose hockey games. I feel that, interestingly enough, Carolina is making some smart moves now, unloading some of the high-priced guys like Stahl. And, of course, the Maple Leafs are under Lou Lamoriello now. I mean, he is just revising the whole team. But I like what Pittsburgh has done. They added Schultz to defense from Edmonton, and this guy was ruined in Edmonton because of the disgraceful way that team has played with all those top picks. Pittsburgh really looks good, and people are forgetting that Marc-Andre Fleury is playing some really good goals for them. They got a fairly nice defense now, and of course, how can you overlook a team when you got Kessel and you got Sid the Kid and you got Malkin plus a few others? Not bad.
Pittsburgh, as under Mike Sullivan, of all people, a Tortorella disciple, has really, really rebounded, and they look like they're now going to be a dangerous out yet again. So, Stan, we'll get you out of here on this. Sort of alluded to before that maybe you're not as high on Washington as other people. So as we head down the stretch of the NHL season, who is your front runner? Who is your favorite right now to take home it all at the end of the year?
Rangers.
Really?
I believe Rangers are going to continue to, first of all, Stahl acclimatize himself, and that'll take a few weeks. Nash will be back. They've been there before. When you got a defense with guys like McDonough and Stahl and Kevin Klein, one of the most underrated guys in the league, a smart coach. I would say in the East Rangers, and since nobody wins two in a row, it won't be Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be worried about Anaheim. And I think Anaheim would be my choice in the West with the Rangers. I don't think my feeling about the Capitals is that they're peaking too soon.
Hmm.
And as good as they've been, and I don't take anything away from them, I just feel that when you get into the crunch, you can put somebody on Ovechkin and diffuse the Ovechkin. And you know as well as I do, Washington never really lives up to its expectations in the playoffs.
Yeah, Washington, one of those teams that, even dating back well before my time, always very talented, but just never quite able to quite get over the hump. See if they can this year. It will be interesting, certainly. The Metropolitan Division, that'll be a fight to the finish and will be very interesting in the first two rounds of the playoffs. So, Stan, thank you so much for joining me, and I understand that you have a couple new books coming out as well.
Well, I have it's out now. I have Rangers' 50 Greatest Moments, and I have another book, which I really get a kick out of. It's a history of hockey by answering questions. And the questions are really what the book is about. And the title of the book is The Handy Hockey Answer Book, and I get a kick out of writing that one.
Sounds like a good read. Stan, thank you so much. Have a good one.
Okay, thank you.
That was MSG's Stan Fischer, who's been around the game for an awfully long time at this point and still going strong at 83 years young. Stan Fischer, and of course, check out those two books that he just mentioned. Stan has published a multitude of books over the years, a ton of them. I don't even know the exact number, but probably he's published more books than I am years old, so we're talking 25-plus at least, so... You heard it here first. Stan Fischer were picking the Rangers to take it all, or at least to come out of the East. I'm not sure if that was his official Stanley Cup prediction. He definitely said out of the East, but I think he said he liked them to ultimately win it all this year. The Rangers sitting at 82 points, and Anaheim out of the West. That's going to be an interesting, kind of a sexy pick, if you will, for a lot of people. The way that Anaheim has sort of risen from the ashes. They were the worst team in the league for... really the first month and a half of the year, struggling to score so much. I mean, this was a team that first month or month and a half, they were averaging, I think, under a goal and a half per game. Now they've won 10 in a row, and they're actually tied with LA atop the Pacific Division at 80 points. Who would have figured? Once upon a time, I think everybody figured that LA was going to just completely run away with this thing, but Anaheim is really found their form now ahead of David Perron as well, and they look like they'll be a very, very tough team yet again in the playoffs. Remember, this was a team that was very close to knocking off Chicago in the Western Conference Finals this year, but came up just a little bit short. So we're running up against the station break now, so we will take a break. And out of the break, we'll continue on with a little more NHL. And then, of course, at 3:20, we'll get into some MMA talk with HBT Sports' Will. So we'll have him on to shed some light on some MMA. That's at 3:20. But we'll continue on at hockey out of the station break. You're listening to New York Peace of Mind here on ESPN New Hampshire.
UFC 196, Diaz versus McGregor is tonight. Watch it with Metro PCS, ESPN New Hampshire, and Bud Light on the giant movie screen at Chunky's in Nashua. Metro PCS is the official wireless partner of the UFC, and we'll be on location with lots of UFC-themed prizes and giveaways. Tickets are on sale now at Chunky's.com. With Metro PCS, you get unlimited data, talk, and text on select devices for just $30, period, with 1 gigabyte of 4G LTE high-speed data.
Have you suffered a motor vehicle injury and need professional assistance? Do you need a team that gets you back on track and taking the green? That team for you is Bartus Law. Bartus Law has three attorneys and two paralegals that can assist you if you've been injured in an accident. Athletes get injured on the field and on the track all the time. Routine injuries can be expected in sports. Accidents are not anticipated in everyday activities. If you get injured in a motor vehicle accident, call Bartus Law at 603-420-8588 or visit www.bartuslaw.com.
There's only three more chances to play in the 2016 Labatt Blue Manchester Monarchs ESPN New Hampshire Bubble Hockey Tournament. Be there Thursday night at 7 at Billy's Sports Bar in Manchester next to Elliott Hospital. This is ESPN New Hampshire's Pete Shepard. If you haven't played yet, what are you waiting for? Join me, the Labatt Girls, and Max from the Monarchs for some bubble hockey fun at Billy's Thursday night. The winner at Billy's moves on to the finals at the April 8th Monarchs game at Verizon Wireless Arena. For more info and the complete bubble hockey schedule, visit ESPNNewHampshire.com.
Outdoor Almanac, brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
You don't have to be a history major to know that a lot has changed since 1865. Just look out your back door. As author Jack Noon explained in the January-February edition of Wildlife Journal in an article titled 150 Years Conserving New Hampshire's Wildlife. In 1865, the legislature authorized the governor to appoint two commissioners on fisheries who quickly set to work introducing landlocked salmon and smallmouth bass to the state and attempting to restore the salmon and shad runs. A few years after that, the fish commissioners were charged with wildlife responsibilities as well. Hunting licenses were introduced for non-residents in 1903. In 1917, fishing licenses became available. In that 150 years, there have been many fish and game success stories and some that didn't quite make the cut. But because of those efforts that started in 1865, seeing deer, moose, bear, eagles, and turkeys is not the uncommon occurrence it once was.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests. Outdoor Almanac, brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
When I think of my youth, I remember a stage of life that's vibrant and full of possibility. The same is true for our forests. A young forest is a light-filled place rich with quickly growing trees, shrubs, wildflowers, and other plants. It may look unruly, but it provides food and shelter for a wide variety of creatures, many of whose numbers have declined in recent decades. In the past, wildfires and flooding created this young forest habitat by creating openings for fresh, new growth. Today, we have largely controlled those natural processes. The responsibility now falls on us to make enough new young forests so wildlife can thrive. Timber harvest, prescribed fires, and mowing can renew middle-aged woods, making them younger and more vital. Do your part by supporting young forest projects on public and private land. Become a well-informed wildlife advocate.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests.
Come join us, the Nashua Area Radio Club, at our monthly meetings on the first Tuesday of each month at the First Church of Nashua. At these meetings, we elect board members, produce projects, and discuss any and all things radio. Make sure you show up by 6:30 for complimentary coffee and donuts. The meeting starts at 7 p.m. That's the First Church of Nashua at 1 Concord Street in Nashua. For more information, visit n1fd.org. That's n1fd.org. Can't wait to see you there.
This is New Hampshire's home for sports on ESPN New Hampshire Radio. WGAM, Manchester. WGHM, Nashua. This is not just ESPN. This is 1250 ESPN, New Hampshire. New Hampshire.
Hi, I'm Tim Daly. If you're over 50, like me, you know that we all need to be more aware of our health. Take pneumococcal pneumonia, for example. It's a serious lung disease that can be spread when people cough or sneeze. My mom had it. Now, it won't always happen this way, but for my mom, it was serious enough that she was in the hospital for over a week. She had difficulty breathing, was really weak, and had a terrible cough. Some adults think they're too active or healthy to get sick, but as we age, our immune system weakens, putting us at greater risk. It may surprise you, but it's estimated 250,000 Americans over 50 are hospitalized each year because of pneumococcal pneumonia. If you're over 50, talk to your doctor about your risk for pneumococcal pneumonia and see if you're up to date on your vaccinations. Learn more at www.whonew.com.
That's www.whonew.com. This message is brought to you by the American Lung Association in partnership with Pfizer.
Hi, I'm...
Radio and television have been part of your daily life for as long as you can remember, so why not make a career out of it? Visit NHAB.org, the online home of the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters, to learn more about over-the-air broadcasting. Interested in pursuing a career in radio or television? Whether it be on the air or behind the scenes, many Granite State stations are looking for motivated people just like you. Visit our online job bank at NHAB.org to view current job openings and even post your resume for potential employers. You can also access a list of upcoming job fairs in New Hampshire as well as NHAB-sponsored events. Students, if you're studying over-the-air broadcasting, apply for the NHAB Student Broadcaster Scholarship and learn about available internships at local stations. It's easy to navigate, full of useful resources, and it's only a click away. NHAB.org, the online source of Granite State Broadcasting.
It's the New York Peace of Mind with Ricky Sobrano and Colin Henderson.
Oh, you could talk a clown into committing suicide, Ricky. You just...
Yeah.
You are just... Oh, you are just so down.
Not even a
bring
sad clown.
Me down, kid.
A happy clown. I
a happy, joyful clown. You could bring him down.
On ESPN New Hampshire.
Ricky Sobrano back here on New York Peace of Mind. The second half of the show now. The second hour as we move past 3 o'clock, we had MSG Stan Fischler on. Well, actually, it turned into the prior segment and a half, basically. We had him on at 2:20, then he got cut off a little bit, then we had him on at 2:40 again to finish up right before the station break. And continue on with hockey, finish up on my final thoughts on some of the stuff that Stan said. Then at 3:20, we'll get into some MMA. We'll have on HBT Sports Will Raskowski to shed a little light on MMA and Conor McGregor fighting Nate Diaz tonight. That'll be at 3:20. And then at 3:40, we'll close up with some NBA talk. So Stan, he was shed some interesting light on generally the local NHL players or the NHL teams and gave us his favorites, his prognostication for the finals as well. Took the Rangers and Anaheim to face off in the Stanley Cup Finals, and Anaheim, mentioning it before, they've been so hot, they kind of rose from the dead. Bruce Boudreau, give him a ton of credit. Bruce Boudreau, a really good coach, really nice guy, and just he seems to be so snake-bitten. It's really, really amazing how he had those incredibly talented teams in Washington and seemed like it would just be a matter of time before that team got over the hump and won a cup, and here we are, 6-7 years later. Boudreau is no longer with Washington. Washington still has not gotten over the hump, although they look awfully good this year. And Anaheim, last year, they go to the Western Conference Finals, lose to Chicago. They come so, so close. This year, they start off terribly. It looks like Boudreau is going to be canned, but he ends up bringing the team together, and now they are in prime playoff position. It looks like they have a chance to make a deep run again. It's funny, with Bruce Boudreau, I saw a cartoon earlier this year, and the joke was, it was the Anaheim staff, the Anaheim owner, calling him into the office and saying, you know, can you come in here for a second, Bruce? He's like, yeah, what's up? You know, we're going to have to let you go. This is when Anaheim was awful. And Bruce Boudreau, in this cartoon, he responds, oh, do you not think I'm a good coach? He's like, no, Bruce, it's not that. It's just at this point, we think you're cursed. It's like, that's been Bruce Boudreau's luck thus far in his career. He's an excellent coach. Just he's a guy who's been snake-bitten. Can't get over the hump, but so many guys, it seems like that was a story early on in their career. Joel Quenneville, it took him forever to finally win, and now he's going for two in a row with Chicago this year. They've become a modern dynasty of sorts, so Boudreau, eventually his day will come. Alain Vigneault is sort of in that area as well. Great coach, but just has not been able to finish it off thus far. And how appropriate it would be if you end up with a Stanley Cup Finals this year where it's Washington versus Anaheim. How great would that be? One of those things where one of them has to win. They can't both lose. It would be physically impossible at that point. Either Boudreau comes out with a cup or Washington finally comes out with a cup. And Washington, even before the Ovechkin era, that's been a team that has just been historically snake-bitten, always very, very talented, and just have not been able to put it together in the playoffs. I think they've only made one finals appearance. That was in the late 90s, and they got wiped out pretty quick by Colorado in the Peter Bondra, Ole Kolzig years, if you remember those teams. And just a team that always very talented. In the 80s, they had the likes of Gartner, Hatcher, and Kevin Stevens was on that team. I think one year they actually had four defensemen that topped 20 goals, which is just amazing, even in the years of the 80s where teams seemed to average 7-8 goals per game total in the NHL. And they had some awesomely talented teams that just could not figure it out come playoff time. But Washington, a good chance this year, they'll probably have to get through their old nemesis, the Rangers, at some point, or at least there's a pretty good chance they will. Looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference right now, I want to touch on the Devils again briefly. The Devils, and Stan and I agreed on this one, that it seems like now they are on the right track and that Ray Shiro, he made the right move, the right decision in getting rid of Stepniak and Jelena and Mateau, guys who not only did they... Well, Stepniak was playing very, very well. He was their leading scorer at the time, but Stepniak, a rental, unrestricted free agent, a guy who's not a kid at this point. He's about 30 years old, and a guy who more than likely was not going to be back. He was not part of their future plans in New Jersey. So to get a second and a fourth for him, that's a great move right there for the Devils, for a guy who won't be back more than likely. And this is a guy who, when the Rangers had him last year, they dumped him essentially for a bag of pucks. I want to get you the exact trade, what the Rangers got rid of him for here. Let's see, it was they traded him for Carl Klingberg. That's who it was. Carl Klingberg is currently playing, former second-round pick. He's now 25 years old. Carl Klingberg, who is currently playing in the KHL, scored 2 goals with the Hartford Wolfpack when he came over last year after Lee Stepniak was traded to Winnipeg. So that's the type of value that the Devils ended up getting, a second and a fourth, whereas the Rangers got a minor leaguer, essentially, for Stepniak just a year ago. So that was a great move by Shiro right there. And Shiro understands, again, this is a guy who came over from the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he knows how you win in the NHL, especially when you're not a big market, big budget team like the Devils certainly aren't. He knows that you need to build through the draft, and that's ultimately what the Devils are going to look to do here. They're stocking up draft picks. They added the second and the fourth for Stepniak. For Mateau, they got Devontae Smith-Pelly, which that was not a bad move either. Smith-Pelly has been really good so far. Already has 2 goals, I think 3 points in 2 games as a Devil. That was another young player that just sort of needed a change of scenery. So they swapped bus, if you will, in shipping off Mateau for Devontae Smith-Pelly. And they picked up a third for Eric Jelena, a guy who about a year and a half ago, I mean, there were very, very high hopes for, but he's fallen out of favor now. There's a lot of young defensemen on that Devils team. Not all of them have developed. And Jelena is a guy who he didn't seem to be progressing, wasn't really playing a lot. He was a healthy scratch, so to recoup a third-round pick for him, a guy who had really fallen out of favor, it seemed like not a bad move at all. And you have so many other young defensemen on that team, and the likes of Larson, who's progressing this year. Again, he was a guy who seemed like his progress had sort of slowed the last couple of years, a former top 5 pick. He's playing much better, so that's a very good sign for the Devils, averaging over 22 minutes per game. Then have other young guys, David Schlumko, Damon Severson, John Moore is, you know, he's a retread of sorts, but still pretty young as well. So that's a young defense pair. John Merrill as well, another younger guy. So there's a lot of young D on that team. Andy Green, the lone older guy, if you will, the lone old guard. And you can only have so many young defensemen, only so much ice time to go around. So to get rid of Jelena at this point, not a bad move. And Devils get 3 draft picks ultimately, and a decent player in Devontae Smith-Pelly for guys who are not in their future plans. That's a solid get. And really, I think of the tri-state area teams, the Devils, ironically, they probably did better than either the Rangers or Islanders. Yeah, the Rangers got the biggest name in Staal, but Staal is, he's not the player he used to be. There's no doubt about that. How much of an impact he will have going forward remains to be seen, and they gave up a decent amount to get him. Ultimately, they did not give up a first-round pick, and they said they wouldn't. They didn't want to give up 2 second rounds instead. can deal with that as a Ranger fan because the Rangers haven't picked in the first round in a while, so it's nice to see them hold on to it first. But Alexi Sorella, a former third-round pick in the Finnish Elite League, he's playing this year, 19 years old, has 18 goals. He has top-end offensive talent. He's, again, guys are third-round pick. They're far from sure things. They're far from can't misses. But he has tools. There's no doubt about that. And he wasn't maybe the Rangers' top prospect, but for a Rangers team that has traded a lot of their prospects of late, he's certainly top five. So it's not like the Rangers got stalled for nothing. They didn't give up a king's ransom, but they didn't exactly get him on the cheap either. So the Devils, in my mind at least, they graded out better than all of the other tri-state area teams in what they did at the trade deadline. And it'll be a long run. Or a long road to hoe, if you will, for the Devils. It'll be a while before they're really a true competitor again. But they seem to be on the right track, and it'll ultimately be in their best interest, ironically, for them to not make the playoffs this year because you get a better draft pick, and that's where they need to start building going forward. They have Pavel Zacha, who they drafted last year, seems to have a lot of ability, could be a franchise-type player going forward. And that's where they need to build. And again, Ray Shiro, he understands that, coming over from Pittsburgh where he won a cup. And how did he win a cup? He drafted Crosby and Malkin. Not saying the Devils are going to have that type of luck where they end up with the first pick and the second pick overall in the draft in back-to-back years and get two franchise players. It probably will not be the case with the Devils. It's not often that you get that lucky and grab guys like that in back-to-back years, but that's the blueprint. Especially when you're a small budget, small market team of sorts, at least, like the Devils. You need to build through the draft, and Shiro seems to understand that. I want to touch on the Rangers a little bit more, too, as we have a couple minutes until the break. Erik Staal, and we know he's a name. Okay, we get that. He's a big name. He's a guy who's a former All-Star, but an All-Star multiple times. He helps. There's no doubt about that. He's a big, strong, sturdy center, the type of guy that the Rangers have not had in a very, very long time. It's been a while trying to think offhand the last time the Rangers had a big, sizable, power forward type center. I want to say it hasn't been since Messier. That's not to say that Staal is Messier in any realm. Nobody would ever confuse Erik Staal for Mark Messier. But he's in that mode, that type of sturdy center. Kevin Hayes is a big guy who is a center, but he does not play what you would call a power forward type game. And it's needed to get a big, strong center like that to match up with some of the best teams in not only the East, but the league overall right now. When you look at Washington, you need somebody to match up with Backstrom and Kuznetsov. When you look at Tampa, you need to match up with Stamkos and Tyler Johnson. When you look at Florida, you have to match up against Barkov, big, strong, young center. Boston, if the Rangers face them, Krejci and Bergeron. The strength of Moten, obviously, Pittsburgh, Malkin and Crosby. Can't forget about that. The Islanders, Tavares. Most winning teams, the strength of the team is in the middle. Obviously, Chicago. When you have a guy like Taze, they're actually a little bit of the exception to this rule because until this year, where they now have Artem Anisimov, the ex-Rangers having an excellent season there, they haven't really had a second-line center, so they've been doing it with one. But that's the exception rather than the rule. Most top teams, it seems like they're built through the middle. That's where the strength is, down the middle, very deep with the centers, and centers arguably the most important position in the league because they cover the most ice. It's not rocket science. Why is the center the most important position? Why does the best kid in youth hockey play center? Because he covers the most ice. That's why. Centers play all over the place. They're down low. They're up high. They come back in the defensive zone. They contribute offensively. So getting a guy like Staal helps a lot in that respect, in that you can match up with the other team's top centers more, or at least more easily. But Staal is not the same player he was 3-4 years ago. This is a guy now that he hasn't scored at a point-per-game pace in 3 years. Last time he scored at a point-per-game pace, that was the lockout shortened 2012-2013 season. He had 53 points in 48 games. hasn't scored 30 goals or more goals, 30 more goals since 2010, 2011. So that's looking at it. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons, assuming he doesn't reach it this year, which he won't because he only has 10 right now. He needs to score better than a goal per game, basically 2 goals a game down the stretch of the season. This is not a guy who's the same player that he used to be. And I understand Carolina has not been a great team. He's not surrounded by a ton of weapons. I understand that his shooting percentage has been phenomenally low so far. 6.3% shooting this year. That's one of the lowest in the league. And his Corsi was very, very positive this year at, I think, the highest Corsi on Carolina, pushing about 60%. That's Corsi is shots and shot attempts for when you're on the ice. So theoretically, if you're attempting more shots than the other team when you're on the ice, that means you're contributing to something positive and generally means that you have the puck. So his Corsi has been positive, and that's a good sign. Certainly not to say it's the end-all, be-all, these advanced stats, but I'd much rather him have a high Corsi than a low Corsi. If his Corsi was low, that would be even more alarming. But this is a guy, he's not the impact player he was 4 or 5 years ago. He just isn't. 31 years old, starting to get a little long in the tooth. And into 3 games, it's an extremely small sample size, but into 3 games that he's played with the Rangers so far, he's shown me very, very little, to be brutally honest. In game 1, looked like he had a bit of excitement, a little bit of a jump in his step. You know, looking at him, didn't look like his legs are dead or anything like that. He's a big guy, can still move a bit. Has done just, quite frankly, very, very little. And to be fair, Vigneault has been playing him third line minutes, which he's not used to. Kind of trying to ease him into the lineup, I suppose. Not quite sure what the plan is there going forward, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense for him to be a third line center. I don't think that's why you go out and get a guy like Eric Staal. You get him to try to be the complement to a Rick Nash when he comes back, to be that 1-2 punch that the Rangers have not had. And of course, to show that type of form, he needs to get on the ice. And so far, he just hasn't really done much of that. We'll see if they try to work him in a little bit more as we go forward. But so far, it hasn't been a perfect fit. We know the guy still has at least something left, but he's obviously not the player that he once was. He has a playoff track record. He's won a Stanley Cup. We know that. He should be very, very motivated. He's obviously playing with his brother, Mark Staal. First time he's playing with Mark, he's played with Jordan for the last couple of years, the last 2 years in Carolina. Also played with his younger brother briefly, Jared, who is kind of a fringe NHL player, has been in the Carolina organization for a while, got a couple call-ups with Carolina, and played with Eric for a bit. So really, it will be interesting going forward. This is a straight rental. Eric Staal will not be back with the Rangers next year. I'd be stunned if he is. The only way he's back with the Rangers next year is if he just decides he wants to take a team-friendly one-year type contract because he wants to play with Mark, and he wants to take another kick at the bucket, if you will, and take a shot at the Cup, which he has not had a chance to do in a while. Carolina, it's been an awfully long time since they've made the playoffs. But Staal, he's a guy, he's a show-me guy right now. He's playing for a contract. He hasn't had a big season in a while. He's got to show me, he's got to show the rest of the NHL that he still has something left in the tank, that he can still be that top-end big center, power forward type guy in the middle. I'm not saying he's ever going to score 40 goals again, but he needs to regain that 30-goal-ish form of years ago if the Rangers are to take a real run at this thing one more time, because the Rangers, they just don't stack up against, offensively, the other top teams. The Tampas, the Washingtons, obviously you go out west, the Chicago's, the Anaheims, LA's, teams like that. They don't have the top-end players, and that's been their Achilles heel. Don't need to tell you how bad Nash has been in the playoffs, or at least how underwhelming Nash has been in the playoffs these last 2 years with the Rangers. He needed help. Rangers theoretically got him help in Eric Staal. But we need to see what exactly he has left. And that remains to be seen. The Rangers will need a lot out of him in the playoffs as we go forward. So we will take a break. And out of the break, we'll actually get into some MMA, if you can believe that. We will have on Will Raskowski of HBTSports.com, kind of our MMA expert, our fighting expert of sorts. Get into some Conor McGregor after this. You're listening to ESPN New Hampshire and New York Peace of Mind.
1250 ESPN New Hampshire, celebrating 10 years as Manchester's sports station.
It's the annual Washington's Birthday Sales Event at Colonial's North End Mazda in Lunenburg. Lease the new 2016 Mazda 3 iSport Sedan Automatic for just $149 a month for 36 months. Or buy from just $18,418 with 0% financing. See dealer website for details. Sale ends February 29th. Buy any newer pre-owned Mazda and get 1 year free maintenance. Celebrate Washington's birthday all month long at North End Mazda in Lunenburg.
Yes, you can have it all at Colonial.
By NorthEnd.com.
Stress. It can make your heart race, your head pound, and your stomach churn. While a little stress can be a good thing and even help you perform under pressure, too much stress can be bad for your health, causing headaches, stomach pain, trouble sleeping, and even a weakened immune system. In the United States, it's estimated that up to 90% of visits to primary care doctors are due to stress-related health problems. It's hard to avoid stress altogether, but there are steps you can take to manage it. During National Stress Awareness Month in April, visit Optum.com/stress for more information about how to prevent stress from getting the better of you, including stress first aid techniques you can do in the moment when you're feeling stressed, and stress prevention techniques to help change the way you approach and think about certain situations. To learn more, visit Optum.com/stress. That's OPTUM.com/stress. A public service message from this station.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata, and recently at the mall, I wheeled past a woman who was offering people a little tray full of food samples, barbecued pieces of chicken on toothpicks. She said to me, "May I offer you one?" And she held it up, at which point I directed my friend to take it and put it in my mouth. Immediately the woman apologized profusely, saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I did not realize you were, I didn't know you couldn't use your hands." She was horrified. But I told her, "Don't worry, it's okay." I said, "Next time, if you want to offer a sample and you see the person has a disability, just say, 'Do you need any assistance?'" Well, this lady was so grateful, so thankful I had given her useful language should it happen again in the future. And from disabilitycampaign.org, I hope that this little lesson provides you with useful language too. It's always good to ask if someone needs assistance.
Captain Eric Lawrence was training Afghan soldiers when his truck was hit by an IED.
I sat home alone for months. I didn't want that anymore. I wanted to go back to work. PVA helped me write my resume, got me a job interview. I got the job.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, changing lives, building futures. To learn more, visit PVA.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Ricky Sobrano back here on New York Peace of Mind as we enter the last 35 minutes of the show. Now we're going to do a little MMA talk, a little UFC, which is kind of uncharted territory for this show. First time we've talked, and we're happy to welcome on Will Raskowski of HBTSports.com. Will, how's it going, buddy?
How's it going, Rick? How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. So, Will, I am not a UFC guy by any stretch of the imagination. I generally don't watch it. You know, I'm aware of who Conor McGregor is, obviously.
Well, don't worry. We'll fix that.
You have to open my mind, if you will, in these next 15 minutes. You have to convert me. I have about 15 minutes to try to win me over as a UFC fan. So,
well,
UFC 196 tonight. Conor McGregor originally slated to face Rafael Dos Anjos. Hopefully I'm saying that right. He backed out because of a broken foot. Now he's taking on Nate Diaz in a non-title bout. And Nate Diaz, well, he took the fight on 11 days' notice. I mean, as brutal as the UFC is, how in the world can you fight effectively on 11 days' notice?
So a lot of people will tell you you can't. And for anybody other than really elite-level fighters, I wouldn't suggest that you would take a fight at 11 days' notice, especially with an absolute killer like Conor McGregor. But both of Diaz brothers, Nathan, who is typically a 155-pound fighter, and his older brother, Nick, who gained some notoriety as a champion outside of the UFC and ended up fighting George St. Pierre for the title, they have a little bit of a reputation basically as cardio freaks. So you're looking at two individuals who typically, I mean, their idea of an off weekend after they have a fight is they compete actively in triathlon.
Wow.
So these are two brothers who have swung back from Alcatraz twice as part of a triathlon when, you know, originally they built Alcatraz where it was because it was believed that was impossible. So you have an individual who maybe hasn't gone to a complete fight camp, but Nate Diaz and his brother have been fighting since they were both about 18 years old. Nate is only 29, I believe, and he already has accumulated a record of 19-10 and has pretty much been fighting the top 10 of his weight class since he won the Ultimate Fighter. Must have been 6 or 7 years ago. So you're talking about a guy who's been around, not his first rodeo, and on top of that, he is really an elite-level conditioning athlete.
Well, you mentioned the weight class, and it's a 170-pound fight, not 155, which McGregor had fought at previously, and Diaz had mostly fought at. I read some sort of quote from Diaz that basically it was along the lines of, can't say the exact words, obviously, because it was a little bit profane, but said something along the lines of, you know, I'm not going to lose weight because of his being McGregor's BS, essentially. So it's at 170 pounds. This is the biggest guy McGregor has fought to this point. Do you see the weight making a difference?
So here's the thing. In actuality, Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor are walking around at relatively the same weight. And a lot of people, when they look at fighting weight classes, whether it be wrestling, boxing, mixed martial arts, the weight classes are an extremely misleading idea. So there's an enormous weight cut culture in mixed martial arts that stems from the amount of boxers and wrestlers who historically have dropped massive amounts of water weight in the lead up to their respective matches to better get an advantage. So they'll weigh in, refuel with as much water, Pedialyte, whatever they possibly can, and attempt to have a weight advantage over their opponent. What we're seeing tonight, which from an MMA analyst perspective is very exciting, are two individuals who are probably not cutting any weight. From my understanding, McGregor walks around at about 171 pounds typically, and Diaz walks around close to 175. So what we're seeing is two individuals who really haven't had to deplete themselves with harsh weight cuts and sitting in saunas, wearing trash bag suits. These are two guys who are coming in pretty much at their natural weight. But when we're coming to when we're talking about size difference in this fight, it's not necessarily weight that's the issue. The big issue is Conor McGregor has enjoyed a large reach advantage over the majority of his opponents. And as a result, he's been able to fight people who are significantly shorter and with a longer reach than he has. Perfectly exemplify when Conor McGregor won his interim title fight with Chad Mendes. We saw that McGregor is an expert at using his reach in both kicks and punches to really dig into some of the smaller fighters in the 145-pound weight class. At 155 pounds, he still has a pretty decent reach. What makes Diaz an interesting fight for him is this will be the first fight he's had where the individual across the cage from him is substantially larger. And I mean, I believe McGregor is about 5'9". Diaz teeters 6'1", so he's got about 2 or 3 inches on him. And on top of that, he has a 4-inch reach advantage in the boxing aspect. So for the first time, McGregor is going to have to punch up, which from a technical standpoint, makes it much harder to land effective blows. And he's going to have a much harder time even landing them to begin with, because Nate Diaz is an individual who's very aware that he's long. And he's very aware that his jab is it's a mean weapon, and he lands it early and often. So what I'm excited to see, almost from a not an expert perspective, but just a fight fan perspective, is I want to see how someone with the incredible movement that Conor McGregor exhibits and the incredible knockout power he exhibits, I want to know how he can apply that against someone who's so long and so rangy and so durable. And that's what makes the Diaz brothers very, very well known, is an incredible durability.
So reading between the lines here, I've heard, obviously, that McGregor is a heavy, heavy favorite, and obviously the 11 days notice thing doesn't exactly help Diaz's case. So I'm not saying that people are saying it's a foregone conclusion that McGregor is going to win, but it seems like most people are making him the heavy, substantial favorite in this one. It seems like that you think Diaz does have a chance here, though.
Well, here's the thing. All bias aside, I have always been a historically big Diaz brother fan, as well as a McGregor fan who supports the UFC, so I might be a little bit biased, but not as much. What I do see is that, at least on a physical level, it is difficult to just completely write Nate Diaz off. I mean, Nate Diaz has fought the best fighters in the world for a very, very long time. He was a lightweight title contender. He ultimately lost to Benson Henderson, but it was a good fight. He has finished the former Pride lightweight champion, Takanori Gomi, who had an enormous run as one of the best lightweights in the sport for a long time. He's beaten a who's who of title challengers, title contenders, and champions themselves. And he's been consistently one of the stronger lightweights in the sport. So while obviously, if you had to put a gun to my head right now, I'm going to say Conor McGregor most likely takes this fight. What I think is going to be interesting is that this will probably be the first fight where we see Conor McGregor get touched up a little bit.
So that will be interesting. Ricky Sobrano talking to Will Raskowski of HBTSports.com. I urge you to check out that website. And I read the article that you wrote on HBTSports.com about this being a matchup of not only two good fighters, but two great talkers as much as anything. McGregor, obviously, he's gotten himself in the news as much as anybody, as much as basically anybody except maybe Ronda Rousey in the past couple months, and Diaz is no wallflower either. He's a guy who's known for flipping the double bird to fighters whenever he feels like it. How does that affect this fight, or does it not at all, Diaz being a guy who's chatty, much like McGregor?
See, that's an interesting aspect that a lot of people are writing off. From a mental perspective, Conor McGregor has enjoyed a substantial advantage in that he's just really, really good at getting under people's skin. I mean, by the time that people get into the cage with him, they're just, you know, smoke coming out of the ears. They just want to kill him.
Yeah.
As opposed to Conor, who's, once that cage door closes, surprisingly calm. So we saw it perfectly exemplified throughout the lead-up to McGregor's fight with Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo was so just detested Conor so intensely, and justifiably so. Conor McGregor pushed the limits a little bit on what's appropriate and not appropriate as far as trash talk leading up to a fight. And a very atypical move of Jose Aldo was to come out with that wild punch, and as a result, got clipped. Like, it was nothing, almost like Conor McGregor was waiting for it. And that comes from a distinct mental advantage, the ability to get in your opponent's head and make them too emotionally invested in the fight. Now, the Diaz brothers have historically been doing that since the beginning of their careers. And McGregor has utilized a lot of similar tactics to them. So before he was in the UFC, a lot of people referred to Conor McGregor as the Irish Diaz brothers. So leading up to this fight, another interesting aspect is exactly that, the idea of, you know, they're both talkers. They're both very aggressive. And the difference, I think, being that this is probably the first fight where McGregor's seen someone who's genuinely not afraid of him. And we saw in fights such as the Dennis Seaver fight, Dustin Poirier, the lead-up fights that kind of built this McGregor aura, where when they got into the cage, they were either so emotionally invested in making wild swings, and then when they got hit once and felt that power, they started to get really nervous. This is going to be the first time where someone fighting McGregor is not afraid of McGregor. And I think, in my opinion, McGregor's going to revel in that. Finally, someone who's going to meet him and engage. And I think that realistically, as far as picking a winner of the fight tonight, the real winner is the fan. We're going to see two of the meanest dudes to ever step into that cage throw down for real and with a full-on intent of really hurting one another. And at the end of the day, they'll probably be sportsmen. They'll shake their hands. But for as long as that fight takes place, these guys are going to be trying to take each other's heads off.
So basically, McGregor might not have the mental edge that he normally does entering a fight tonight, but shouldn't affect him. And if anything, it should just make it more interesting as fight time comes upon us. So one of the other questions about McGregor, one of the ones that I've had at least, he's 19-2, which is obviously just a phenomenal record. But it's been said he's relatively untested. He kind of burst onto the scene so quickly, and it had been accused that UFC and Dana White was maybe trying to give him opportunities that other fighters wouldn't get right off the bat because he was such a talker and because he became so popular. I mean, I had even heard him referred to, and this is real hyperbole right there, as the Irish Muhammad Ali, which is obviously just crazy amounts of praise. So I guess the question is he untested, and just how good is he, or do we not know yet?
Well, we can't say he's untested. While leading up in his career, you know, a lot of people did say he was almost spoon-fed opponent. He got a lot of people who were willing to engage him where he was best. He was a stand-up fighter, an incredible striker with absurd knockout power. A famous MMA trainer named Faraz Sahabi, who was George St. Pierre's head coach, famously put it that Conor McGregor has the touch of death in his left hand. And he was put into fights with people who would be willing to stand and engage with him. Now, having a weakness doesn't make a fighter any less talented or any less gifted. It's how they respond to those believed weaknesses. So when we saw McGregor fight Chad Mendes, we saw a real test. Chad Mendes is an NCAA Division I wrestler, extremely gifted, extremely physically strong. And in the first round of that fight, Chad Mendes kind of had his way with Conor McGregor. He held him down, beat him up, bloodied his face. But McGregor came back, started talking the second the next round started, saying, "Is that all you got? Is that all you got?" And adjusted his striking style to make it easier to defend that takedown. And once he had Mendes where he wanted him, knocked him out before the end of the second round. So to say McGregor is untested, you can't say that. I mean, he knocked out an undefeated 10-year champion in 13 seconds. He beat a two-time title challenger in under two rounds. No one has made it to the final bell minus one fighter, Max Holloway, has even made it to the final bell with him. So say he's untested, I don't think that's accurate. To say he's without weakness, I would say that's also inaccurate. I mean, everybody's got a weakness, and it's all a matter of how the fighter can make sure that it's not exploited. So I think McGregor's been challenged just fine. I think now it's time for him to move up to the next level of challenge.
See, that's why we have you on here, Will. These are things that I wouldn't know unless you told me. That's why.
That's what I'm here for.
You look at McGregor. I guess the question is, okay, maybe he's not untested, but is he, in his mind's eye, is he perhaps not as good as he thinks? Is he already thinks that he's the greatest fighter in the world. Does he still have a lot of proving to do to get into that upper tier, to be really a top five fighter, or is he already there?
Well, in my opinion, as far as what they would refer to as the pound for pound list, meaning regardless of weight class, where does he fall among skill? I absolutely would give Conor McGregor a spot in the top five right now. I mean, a 13-second knockout of the former number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world who hadn't been defeated in 10 years. You know what? I'm gonna give you some credit for that. I'm going to let you hang out with the top 10. Do I believe that he's really at a John Jones level yet? Not quite. He has a little bit more proving to do. But I would easily consider Conor McGregor among the top five fighters in the world right now. But like we've seen time and time again, I mean, at one point, Jose Aldo was the number one in the world, and 13 seconds after that, he's gone from the list. So as of right now, yes, I would consider Conor McGregor easily in the top five. But who knows? I mean, Nate Diaz could very well come out and spoil that party tonight.
So we'll get you out of here on this one, Will. Give me an official prediction on this fight tonight, Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz, UFC 196. And maybe give me a round that it ends, or does it go to distance?
If I had to make a prediction, I feel like I'm cheating on one of my original favorites in Nate Diaz, but I'm going to say Conor McGregor by a technical knockout in the fourth round, if I had to guess. I think it's a good fight. I think Diaz lands some shots, McGregor gets bloodied up, but ultimately his movement's going to prevail, and he's going to land that big right hand, and we're going to see a technical knockout.
All right, so you heard it here first. Conor McGregor TKO in the fourth round, but he will be pushed by Nate Diaz. Will, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Pleasure having me on.
All right, so that was Will Raskowski of HBTSports.com. That's a website that I'm involved with Colin Henderson, normally the co-host of the show as well. We urge you to check it out. That's HBTSports.com. Give it a look. Got some good readings on there, some good stuff on there. Got some MMA articles, too, if you happen to be interested in that. Will does a lot of good MMA and UFC writing. So we will take a break, and out of the break, for the last 10 minutes of the show or so, we'll get into some NBA talk. Haven't mentioned basketball at all, so we'll touch on that briefly at the end of the show. You're listening to New York Peace of Mind on ESPN New Hampshire.
1250 ESPN New Hampshire, Manchester's local ESPN.
Hi, this is Pat Weinreich, general manager for The Joint. You know, the chiropractic place? With no appointments necessary, no insurance, night and weekend hours, we are making quality alternative health care convenient and affordable. And we're coming soon in March. We will be located at 219 Daniel Webster Highway in Nashua, New Hampshire. Stay tuned and please visit our website at www.thejoint.com.
Sergeant R.J. Anderson's dream was to take to the skies.
I've always wanted to be a soldier. But my ultimate goal was to be a pilot. I think I was meant to fly. I had just applied to be a part of the 160th SOAR Regiment, and I was going to airborne school that next Monday. So I decided to go on a motorcycle ride with my buddies. We were going through a turn, and that's all I remember. That's the day everything changed. I was told by the doctor that I would never walk again. Thanks to Paralyzed Veterans of America, competing in adaptive sports lit my fire again. They help you transition for the rest of your life to that individual that you want to be. Sports like hand cycling really pushes you to find who you are in that redefining moment after injury. With PVA Sports, I've found my freedom. Now when I think about my future, the possibilities are endless.
For more information, visit PVA.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata, and when you hear the word colorblind, what do you picture? Most people assume that all individuals with colorblindness can only see in shades of gray, but that's a common misconception. The truth is, there are different types of colorblindness, each resulting in an inability to see certain colors in the usual way. So, a cherry red looks like an odd shade of blue, and traffic lights appear to be different shades of yellow-green. Yikes! That makes things like driving, especially driving or cooking, or picking clothes for a job interview, a real challenge. The good thing is, for most people, living with colorblindness is just a matter of making adaptations, such as special tags for clothing and unique prescription lenses. From disabilitycampaign.org, if you think you or your child may have a color vision deficiency, please contact your eye care practitioner to schedule a test.
A key to your child's success at school rests at home. This is Scott McGilvery, president of the NEA New Hampshire. One of the most important skills any student can learn is how to study. Help your child establish a study routine and a quiet place for homework, away from television and other distractions. Combined with a consistent bedtime, your student will be primed for academic success.
A message from NEA New Hampshire.
Ricky Serrato back here on New York Peace of Mind, beaming out from the Merchants Auto Studio in New Hampshire, but coming to you live from New York on this busy Saturday afternoon. Had a full show for you, a lot of hockey talk with Stan Fischer, then just had Will Raskowski on to talk a little UFC. And now we'll close out with some NBA. We've neglected the NBA today because of all the guests and kind of went out of the, normally we would do two NBA segments on a day like this, but because of the UFC fight, wanted to give Will a chance to get on and neglected the NBA just a bit, but never a dull moment in Knicks land, certainly, in the NBA, as the Knicks are, at this point, I mean, dead and buried. There's just no doubt about that. They don't have a chance at the playoffs, 25-38, and sinking like a rock, sinking like a ship at this point. They're seven games back of a playoff spot as we enter the day. Lost last night. Lost 3 in a row, 2-8 their last 10. Last night, a real rough one. They were up by 8 or 7 or 8, one or the other, with about 3 minutes left against the Boston Celtics, your hometown Boston Celtics, hometown to New Hampshire at least, and ended up blowing that lead, choked it all away, and ended up being an Avery Bradley layup that sunk the Knicks. They took the lead briefly towards the end. Carmelo Anthony had a shot with, I think, about 25 seconds left, and Avery Bradley goes right down the other way. And the Knicks, their final possession, they were out of timeouts and just did not have a very good final possession. Carmelo Anthony kind of took a little bit too much time. I don't know if he realized that Boston had a foul to give, and with about 3 seconds left, he ended up just chucking one up from about 27 feet that was really not that close, and the Knicks end up falling. And it was another interesting day because Kristaps Porzingis, who, you know, you call him the one bright spot, basically, of this entire season. I don't think there's any disputing that at this point. He plays all of 20 minutes in that loss. Why? I mean, who knows? Why in the world is he only playing 20 minutes? Who knows what's going through Kurt Rambis's mind at that point? Kurt Rambis, I don't know, maybe he was thinking about more about what he was going to browse on his internet when he went home, or what he was going to favorite on Twitter, and that little scandal of sorts, not even a scandal, just stupid and kind of embarrassing as much as anything. Now, Porzingis, 15 points in 20 minutes, 5 boards, he seemed to have a pretty solid game, 6-14 from the field, but he sits down the stretch, and obviously it doesn't work, and not surprising, I was reading the reaction, I was watching the Ranger game, because I mean, why in the world am I going to watch the Knicks when I have the chance to watch the Rangers as well, when I have that option? But I was reading the response on Twitter last night that that Rambis will have some explaining to do if the Knicks end up giving the game away, and sure enough, they did. And I think Rambis did a mea culpa of sorts after the game for his rotation decisions and sitting Porzingis, who's almost certainly the Knicks' second-best player at this point behind Carmelo Anthony. And it didn't work. The Knicks lose. Not going to make the playoffs. Don't have a first-round pick. And yet again, a rudderless franchise. And the amazing thing about the Knicks, and here's really what it comes down to, is it's not just that they're bad. It's the dysfunction as well. That it's just baffling how year after year they can be just flat-out embarrassing the Knicks. And it's not even so much on the court, it's off the court as well. I mean, this year, obviously, with the Rambis little minor, I don't even want to call it a scandal, because it's just stupid. Again, Rambis, if you didn't hear it the other day, I think it was a week and a half ago, whatever exactly it was, he ended up favoriting basically a porn tweet on Twitter. And of course, because people have nothing better to do all day, they check celebrities of sorts, their favorites, and see what they're up to online. That's exactly what somebody did. So immediately, as soon as Rambis does that, somebody finds out, it becomes news, Deadspin picks it up, whatever else. And in the highlight of stupidity, instead of just owning up to it, the Knicks, of course, claim, oh, his Twitter account was hacked. That's why it happened. And it becomes they have to have a press conference and whatever else because he favorited a tweet. It's just so dumb. I mean, first of all, Rambis has to be smarter. It's just dumb. This is a guy who's an interim head coach. He's trying, allegedly, to make the case that he should be the head coach going forward. He won't be because he's done an awful job so far, and he's a retread coach who has not had any success at any of his stops so far. I think he was with Milwaukee. That was where he got his first shot. Minnesota. Wrong M. The Timberwolves, I think he got his first shot there, didn't have any success. He's a retread coach. He is not going to be the head coach of the Knicks going forward. But if he's trying to make a case to be the head man and trying to impress his ex-boss or current boss, still Phil Jackson, and he's a triangle guy, he's a Lakers guy, is Rambis, well, he's not exactly putting his best foot forward. Because what he did, it just falls under the category of stupid. I mean, you have to think. You have to know that people are going to be looking at that. I mean, why is he even on Twitter to begin with? What's the point? And I've heard it's mentioned before, and it's kind of true. I mean, is Greg Popovich on Twitter? No, of course not. Is Mike Krzyzewski on Twitter? No, he's not. Is Steve Kerr on Twitter? I don't think he is. Pretty sure he isn't. And that's a younger guy as well. I mean, why are you wasting your time? Same with Phil Jackson, for that matter. Why are you wasting your time on Twitter? It's so dumb. I mean, don't you have better things to do? Don't you know that all that's going to happen is people are going to pick you apart and trash talk you and try to find little mini controversies like this? So that's where the Knicks are right now. As usual, they're 13 games back of 500, embroiled in a porn scandal of sorts, if you want to call it that. And then last week, the latest thing, where Carmelo Anthony getting heckled by a fan, what does he do? He points up to the stands and says, there's the owner, there's Dolan, ask them for a refund. Can't really even blame Carmelo Anthony. I mean, guy's frustrated. There's no doubt about that. Sounded frustrated and demoralized after last night's latest crushing loss. Was it smart? No, obviously not. You're better off just, you know, turning the other cheek, not saying anything. And certainly not involving the owner when you do. But then the dumbest thing is, of course, what does the Garden do? What does Dolan do? Saxophone Jimmy, as I like to call him. Makes him apologize. Why? He was mad. He was frustrated. Heckling fan. Shouldn't have said anything. He did. Move on. It's a non-issue. If you just decide to move on, the Knicks don't. They force Carmelo Anthony to issue an apology, and then what does Carmelo Anthony do? He immediately admits the apology wasn't his idea. So immediately we know, right off the bat, that it was James Dolan. Within a matter of hours, we know that James Dolan forced him to apologize. It's just dumb. It's the never-ending circus of the New York Knicks. It really is amazing. And you thought, at least, or at least I did, that with Phil Jackson coming in, and again, he hasn't been a GM, and you could argue he's semi-retired, basically, at this point, and he's just collecting that massive paycheck. But you figure that he would bring at least some credibility to the team, that at the very least, whereas they've been just embarrassing for so many years. Obviously, under Isaiah Thomas, it was just a joke how comical they were. And then on top of that, after that, you have Donnie Walsh, and Donnie Walsh tries to bring credibility to the franchise, but he ends up essentially getting kicked out the door, and there's the Carmelo Anthony trade. It became common knowledge right off the bat that James Dolan usurped him, that he ordered him to make that trade, whereas Donnie Walsh might have waited, maybe would have just waited to sign Carmelo Anthony in free agency, or would have tried to get the price to go down because the Knicks were just bidding against themselves. It's never-ending drama with the GMs of the Knicks. And I thought maybe with Phil Jackson, at the very least, Dolan would listen to him, that Jackson would bring credibility, he would bring class to the franchise. Well, guess what? Here we are, embroiled in many scandals of sorts as the year goes on, as the Knicks are yet again headed to a playoffless season with no first-round pick, because the first-round pick was traded for, of all people, Andrea Bargnani. A first-round pick for Andrea Bargnani. So that's a lottery pick that the Knicks don't have as a result of that. And I mean, you look at this team, they have to be rebuilding going forward. That has to be the plan. I understand not trading Carmelo Anthony at the deadline this year, because the Knicks still allegedly had a chance to make the playoffs at the trade deadline. And the Knicks, as we know, they don't have their first round pick. So tanking, quote unquote, tanking the season would do you no good at this point, or at the trade deadline, because you don't have your first-round pick anyway. So hold on to Melo. All right, I can understand that. But if he's still on this team, start of next season, I just don't get it. It doesn't seem like Jackson was ever the biggest fan of him. Jackson seemed kind of lukewarm at best about even re-signing him. It seemed like he just did it because, well, kind of had to, and Carmelo didn't really have many other options anyway. And Melo, we know he has that no-trade clause, but it would be mutually beneficial, to say the least, for the Knicks and Carmelo Anthony to part ways this offseason. The Knicks need to rebuild. There is no doubt about that. They need to get younger. They need to get faster. They need to get more athletic. They need to build around Porzingis. And a 1-2 of Porzingis and Anthony is not going to be good enough to make them a contender. And is a free agent going to come here? Why would they? The Knicks are dysfunctional. I mean, that's been the story for so many years. Oh, it's the bright lights of New York. You know, it's Broadway. It's the nightlife. Whatever else. Everybody wants to play in New York. What big free agent has come here? Nobody's come here. Amari Stoudemire came here because he had no other options. Carmelo Anthony came here because he had no other options. And the last time he came here, because the Knicks could offer the most money. That was all. Knicks are not a big draw. Need the rebuild. That's the end. See what they do. It's always interesting. It's always a comedy. The New York Knicks. So we are out of time. We'll be back on next week with Colin Henderson. I'm Ricky Sperano. Until next week. See you then.